Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz and I am joined by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, he loves the card Manamorphose. That is Matt Morgan.
Joey, since The Mandalorian is so popular, I figured I'd start a band with some of my buddies. We're going to call ourselves the Stormtroopers, but we're never going to have any hits.
I could see where that one was going. I'm proud of myself.
I couldn't because otherwise I would have hit it.
Oh, that was great. Thank you, Matt. Next up, he loves mana, but not more foes. That's Dana Roach.
I already have my Christmas shopping done for both of you two this year. I got you the new secret lair themed around Christmas music, where all the cards are built on Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. So look forward to getting that next couple
Thanks,
weeks.
Thanks, Dana.
You're welcome.
Sounds pretty legendary. I'll give you that.
Anyway, this is the EDH Retcast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we'd like to do is give all that data a little more context. Ladies, gents, and everyone in between, we have the absolute honor of being joined this episode by the radiant, a phenomenal guest. She had that metalcraft even before Wizards made it a keyword ability. It's Olivia Gobert-Hicks.
Oh my god, radiant, my goodness, thank you. Nice to be here.
You are so welcome, Olivia. It's great to have you with us here on the cast.
Happy to be here.
We've had you on before. Mm-hmm. It was like in episode 86 or something like that when we were talking about playstyles. But ever since then, we've got video now. So it's awesome to be able to actually video cast with you, too.
Yeah, this is great.
So we've got you on to basically kind of help us wrap up the year. Dana, what is it that we're talking about on this particular episode?
We're going to talk about the 2020 Year in Commander Review.
Basically, yeah, it's our EDH Rec EDH Review. Just looking past the entire year to see what the highlights were, what the lowlights were, the data that's kind of come from all of the sets and all of the many, many products that we've received in this year and just go through it. But of course, before we actually get to our main topic, we want to take a quick break and thank the folks at the Command Zone podcast, Josh LeQuai, Ashlyn, Lady Danger, and Manson, a huge team doing all of the post-production work on our podcast to bring it to video to make it look as awesome as it does. So thank you all so much. And of course, I want to take a brief moment to thank our sponsors for the show too.
The EDH Retcast is sponsored by Card Kingdom and TCG Player. Card Kingdom is my personal go-to for selling cards online that I'm not playing and using that store credit to get cards I need, like this stack of Three Visits and War Rooms that just came in the mail today that I've already sleeved up. TCG Player has a fantastic inventory of cards as well. If there's something you want, they probably have it. So just go to EDH Rec and click on the appropriate vendor link beneath the card. Doing so supports both the site and the show.
Or if you would prefer to support the show directly, you don't have to buy any cards, even though you probably should. That's how we play the game, after all. But you can head over to patreon.com/EDHRetcast. You can support the show directly. You can join our Patreon tier of any level that you desire, whether you just want to join the Discord, you want to get all the episodes a day early, maybe. You're able to do all that and more at patreon.com/EDHRetcast. And we appreciate all of the support. In fact, we shout out a patron each and every single week. And this week we have Michael Paul Schell. Thank you so much for your patronage. We definitely appreciate it. And thanks for putting up with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. So now we want to get to our main topic. But of course, before we do, Olivia, I kind of want to just give the floor to you so that folks can get to know you a little bit better, even though they'll probably know you more than they even know us. But just how's your year been? How's 2020 been for you?
I don't know what time is anymore. That's how my that word has no meaning. It has no.
Yep.
I have no relationship with that word anymore. 2020's been good. It was busy in the beginning and then it got real quiet. So yeah, just been streaming Paper Commander and, you know, trying to stay sane and healthy and all that fun stuff. It's just, it's been a year, you know, but we're going to talk about that. That's the whole show.
There you go. Yeah, it has certainly been a year, but it has also been really great to be able to, you know, for example, stream with you to play on both your stream and ours to get those virtual games in has been definitely a highlight for me.
Sure.
For sure. And I guess before we even get to like numbers or anything like that, maybe this is a question for the room. Like, Olivia, what is your overall feeling? Is like going into this, is this sort of like a general thumbs up on whole this, you know, this whole year of Commander? Or is it maybe like a in the middle, thumbs down? How do you overall think the year of Commander went?
I think the year of Commander was actually just the year of product fatigue. because there was so much. There was just a lot to try to keep track of and watch and manage, and it was the year of Commander in quantity, certainly. Quality, I guess we'll discuss that as well. But yeah, I think that there was a lot to pay attention to. There was a lot that happened, and it was definitely a year. It was a year.
Time has no meaning. Nope. It was definitely a year. Matt or Dana, what do y'all think going into this, looking back on it, at least now, is it a generally positive vibes or how are you feeling?
I mean, I think Olivia put a really nice spin on it by saying, is this the quality or the quantity when it comes to Commander in 2020? It depends on who you ask. I think there was at least something for everybody. Like everybody, no matter what you like to do with the Commander format, there were cards and there was product for you, which that's obviously something that, you know, I think WotC set out to do. And I do think they accomplished that goal at least. Man, it was a year though. I agree with you, Olivia. We'll see. I think the numbers that we're going to see on the website, they're going to change so much about just the format in general in the next 6 months, I think. So 2020 introduced us to a lot of things, and I think the lasting effects we haven't even started to see yet.
All right.
I agree there was a lot of product. The product fatigue thing was absolutely a thing. My primary concern going into the year was the previous year when we also got a real uptick in the amount of Commander product out there. I think there was a lot of warping Commander product, whether it was things like Arcane Signet that went in, you know, every single deck, or Commanders like Tulane and Korvald that absolutely warped games and warped metas just by, number one, how strong they were, number two, how easily strong they were. So I think there was a trend leading up to those Brawl decks last year that was, at least for me, a little bit worrisome. I think they mostly dodged that this year. Not that there wasn't a lot of strong cards, but I feel like the cards that came out this year didn't necessarily warp the overall game the way the cards they built for Commander did in 2019. So I'm relieved that I think they've kind of started to figure that out a little bit better than it seemed like they were doing a year ago.
Mm. All right. I think that's a recommendation or a thumbs up.
Yeah, Generally speaking, okay. It was a positive year. I'm relatively happy with most of it.
All right, sweet deal. And let's actually go through it now, because Olivia, as you said, time has no meaning. So like I literally had to look through what sets even came out this year because I just done forgot.
I could have, someone at some point had said like, oh, Eldraine came out this year. I was like, no, it didn't. Theros was this year though, which was also 6 years ago and in the future. I don't.
That's exactly it.
Fun fact, there were 229 legendary cards in 2020. That's also how many products we got.
See, one for every, this is what I'm talking about.
It is there.
Quantity.
There
you go. Quantity was a thing.
All right, Olivia, as you mentioned, Theros Beyond Death was the first set that we had this year. Let's get to some numbers on that one. The top commander from Theros Beyond Death ended up being Syona, Captain of the Pileus, with about 829 dex to her. That's the Selesnya token-making uncommon commander. That has a lot of aura stuff going on. And then some top cards from Theros as well, just some highlights from this set. We had Dryad of the Elysian Grove, which can give you extra landfall drops, does a lot of color fixing. And of course, there was Thassa's Oracle, which did quite a lot of stuff as well. Mm-hmm. An extra win condition for the lab man aficionados out there as well. Both of those cards show up in about 17% of decks that are eligible to run them. So some good hits in the 99s for, you know, Theros cards, although the commanders themselves don't seem to have really struck a chord all that much. The numbers are kind of low, all things considered, for the commanders.
Yeah, and the commanders also, Syona being number one and Heliod is not far behind her. I would bet in, you know, a year or two, if we look back, I don't know if we'll see either of those two commanders at the top slot from Theros. Mm. They're both relatively one note, and that isn't a bad thing necessarily, but I think people who wanted to build that one note built it, and I would imagine there isn't a lot of people that are going to now want to play that particular fairly narrow deck down the road. They will instead be playing maybe the more open-ended commanders, and I would guess those will, over the course of the relatively near future, get surpassed.
Mm. See, I don't know. Like, Theros to me, like you said, Olivia, like, Theros actually happened this year, and I feel like a lot of people just kind of forgot about the set altogether, just because of all the circumstances surrounding when the set actually came out.
Right.
We had Ikoria, Lair, Behemoths right after, and Commander 2020, which was the pre-con, which everybody looks forward to. So any attention people might have been paying attention to Theros just got completely overlooked by everything that was going on, and then the set following. So I don't even know if people are going to be circling back to Theros Beyond Death all that much to be creating new commander decks, at least. Like Joey said, the 99 definitely got a lot of help from this set.
I agree.
But the legendaries, I'm not so sure about that.
It was the last set that came out in the Earth that was.
Right. It's true. Exactly.
Reality. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We had a new reality kind of happen that, like, Theros events were like the last of the events that were in person. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened after that. So it was just, I don't know. It felt like there was this big lead up to it that, like, hey, we're going back to Theros. There's this thing. And then, of course, you know, all the like story dropped out and everything like that. But it feels like it never got the chance to really get explored outside of Arena. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, but I agree that,
That's part of it is, like, you know, we just immediately had Ikoria right after that with a ton of new mechanics and all this crazy stuff and new art styles and new card styles and everything. So Theros kind of just got, like, dropped by the wayside just by the merits of, like, what happened in the world and, like, accelerating us through this timeline to where we are now, you know? It just kind of got forgotten.
I think there was also still a lot of blowback from Eldraine happening at the time. Like, that was such an impactful set in so many different formats. It still kind of swallowed up Theros because it was still just like domino chains.
It was the problem child still. Yeah.
Yeah. To this day, it still is. Yeah. Like, at this point, it still is.
All right. So y'all have mentioned how Ikoria also potentially had the after effect of overshadowing Theros a little bit. Let's get to some numbers on those as well, because we had, of course, the Commander 2020 product and the Ikoria set. The top commander from the Commander Precons ended up being Kalamax the Storm Sire, about 1,600 decks for the Lightning Butt Dino. And the top card from the Precons was, of course, Fierce Guardianship, which shows up in over 18,000 decks. 25% of all eligible decks that have been built since these cards were released, they're running Fierce Guardianship. That is massive. It's inclusion big. For what is essentially a free counterspell.
Kind of, because it's only non-creatures, yeah.
It's the card that feels closest to, like, an auto-include, maybe. If you're playing blue and your commander is remotely an important part of your deck and is going to be in play and need to be in play, assuming you can get a hold of one, it feels like it's worth slotting into your deck just full stop. And that's just in decks where it's amazing. It's still pretty good in every other blue deck.
Yeah, showing up in a quarter of the decks that it's eligible. And it's just, it's funny that was kind of I feel like the runaway as far as the commander, you know, specific cards that ended up in those decks, but also just from that entire set, like Kalamax and Fierce Guardianship were the chase, you know?
Yeah, very much. And then from the main set, we had the most popular one there, Nethroi, Apex of Death, which is that mutant that can bring a whole bunch of stuff back. Like 1,200 decks for that one. That's pretty insane. But we also got the Triomes. Those were a pretty big hit as well. The, you know, the cycling lands, but they also have all of the basic land types, so they're easy to fetch or to use Farseek on, for example. Yeah. They show up, you know, between 7,000 or 8,000 a piece. So like roughly 40% of the decks that can play them are playing them. And that's also some really huge inclusion rate.
I mean, we need good mana base and commander that's more than just shocks or scries or checks or, you know, like this is the sort of thing like Sharad Enters Tapped, but now you fixed for three colors and you get to search for them. Silly not to run them.
Yeah, well, and when we look beyond the mana bases, as great of an addition as Triomes were for wedge colored decks, Ruinous Ultimatum, we say Fierce Guardianship is played in 25% of blue decks. Ruinous Ultimatum is played in 26% of all Mardu decks. So like if we're talking just about sheer adoption rate, that card is such a house.
It is a house.
It blows up everything.
I personally am a fan of Eerie Ultimatum, but yeah, Ruinous is bunkers in Mardu.
Yeah, all the ultimatums, like if we wanted like the most commanderiest commander but non-commander set, like just a standard set, Ikoria was definitely that.
Mm. Ikoria was that, but also it was so commander that it even brought us some companions.
It broke standard in all 60-card formats.
Well, this is a set where, talking about product fatigue, this is where I really first noticed it because, you know, I've been playing Commander 7 or 8 years now. Every set that came out, I know what the commanders do, what the legendary creatures do off top of my head. I maybe don't know if it's a 2-2 or a 2-3 or whatever, but like, even if I hadn't played it, I could tell you what that commander did. I don't know what Nethroi does, the number one commander in the list. I couldn't tell you. I'm sure I read the card, but like I can't remember the difference between this and the four other Apex of whatevers that do very similar things. There was just so much stuff. And a lot of the stuff in Ikoria was kind of similar anyway, but I just can't remember what's what. And that's the first time that's really ever happened.
Well, Dana, I definitely agree with you. Like, I think I lasted one more set than you when it comes to just losing track of all the legendaries that were going on, which that set actually was. The Core Set 21, there was 10 new legends there. And for some reason, just this was the peak of when I lost grip of everything. I did see the most important legendary creature of the year, though, Rin and Sarian Separable, which was the cat dog combo, 705 decks that came out so far for Rin and Sari, which is, I mean, lovely to see. Pet tribal, so great.
Critters.
So many critters.
Critter tribal.
That's actually the deck that my stepdad ended up building as well. And I, those cats and dogs, they look very cute, but they are in fact very vicious. But that's also the set that gave us the new Sanctum of All as well. So it brought back some shrine stuff. But even then, that's only showing that the rate of adoption among all of those is not huge, but it is really cool to see. This feels like another set where things really seem to have gotten buried by a bunch of the other stuff going on surrounding them. So these didn't get as much time to breathe, I guess.
I think that's exactly it. It's not that any of this stuff was necessarily super good or super bad or, you know, it just we never got time to explore it. Because the second, you know, we get a preview season and then something's released for a week before the next preview season. And we never actually got the chance to, like, sit and soak in what was, what just got offered and be able to have, like, the full experience of seeing it in a bunch of different contexts and different games against different decks and different situations. So we see a card, it's really cool, and it's like, oh, crap, there's something else that's coming out. Now I need to see what this is. And you barely even get the chance, like, oh, maybe I'll put it in this deck. And that was it. And it got in there or it didn't. And you never really got to explore it in its time frame that it was released.
Yeah. Well, and once upon a time, core sets were generally pretty boring. Mm-hmm. So if it got left behind or forgotten, there really wasn't maybe much that was of value lost.
Right.
They've really figured out how to do core sets. So it's actually kind of too bad that it did get lost in the mix here, because they've really done a very nice job. There's excellent reprints in it. There's excellent new cards. Mm-hmm. Core sets are genuinely exciting now, and there's just so much stuff we couldn't get excited about it.
Yeah, Dana, I think on our review of Core Set 21, we actually called it like our favorite Core Set, but we came away with the same conclusion there. It's just like, we hope this gets time to breathe, and it looks like it really just didn't, which is a little bit sad because it's a lot of really fun stuff going in there. I'm pretty sure that there will be cards that I forget exist that it turns out they came from Core Set 21. So I want to make sure that I do my research on them for sure. The same will also go for the other product that came out pretty closely after that was Jumpstart. Talk about sets that didn't get their time in the spotlight. Seriously. Jumpstart. There were 10 new amazing legends in Jumpstart. The most popular Zelda ended up being Tinybones Trinket Thief, but given the limited availability of Jumpstart, only like we've got barely 400 decks for Tinybones. Wow. Let alone any of the other fantastic ones that arrived there too. It's just like, oh man, I really wish that we'd gotten more chance to spend time with this product because it was so, so cool.
If you
such an original idea.
And that's to say, if you even got your hands on it at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Which is another travesty.
If there's a set that suffered from just circumstances of the year more than Theros, it's definitely Jumpstart because people never got to open packs. People never got to go do what this was designed to do and just like slam two packs together and play a game.
Yep.
That never got to happen, which means so many of these cards never got into the wild. People never got to slot them into decks. Like you had to be very intentional and open up your wallet to get most of these cards and like that. It stinks because Jumpstart was such a cool idea, such a cool set, and nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
Not just the reprints in that set were
excellent. Awesome. Yes. And again, the new stuff was good too. And it was, I mean, not complete. It was not so imbalanced that it was like, oh my gosh, we can't run this in Commander. It was like, hell yeah, Tinybones rules. This is cool. Like they were engaging, you know, those legendaries. And so now they're hardly out there.
There's amazing basic lands in Jumpstart. That's how great Jumpstart is.
Well, yeah, like, aren't the Phyrexian swamps are like $30 or something absurd like that?
And they're stunning.
They are pretty sharp. Yes, I do agree. But like it just, man, I wish people had as much chance to open Jumpstart as they intended for, because my worst fear about Jumpstart is that WotC is going to consider this set a failure when this is kind of the set that a lot of people wanted, but they just didn't know about it. They didn't know they wanted it, but they did.
Yeah. Goodness,
even if they did want it, they couldn't get their hands on it because of extenuating circumstances. This was not a failure in design or, you know, the gameplay or anything of it. It was simply in distribution. Just nobody could get it. How can you love it if you can't find it and play it?
Reality failed us all.
Yeah.
Indeed. From gameplay to reprints to just sheer value to original designs to balance, this is probably one of the most well-executed products that I've ever seen, and yet we just don't have it. So
do it again, Gavin.
Of course
Gavin,
it was this one. This of course it was this one. Just print it again next year.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. Moving a little bit on into the timeline, Zendikar Rising came out as well. There were like 17 new legends in Zendikar Rising. The top one ended up, of course, being the four-color Omnath, Locus of Creation, who already has 1,300 decks for that commander, which is pretty insane. And then we also got those modal lands, some spells that could be lands on the other side, or the modal lands themselves, the pathways that have those dual colors. Those ones are so far some of the most popular cards from the set. They show up in roughly like 18 to 20% of decks that can play them. Not to mention Balaged Recovery is really climbing up in the ranks as we keep track of it over time, but 17% of decks that can play the Balaged Recovery to get something back from your graveyard or to be a land on the other side are playing it, which is a pretty good rate of adoption that only seems to be going up.
I did my best. This number would be much, much lower if I weren't updating my decks these days, but I have been, and it's an evergreen deck. It's such a good card, and like Feed the Swarm is just so absurd. Like every time Dana plays it, I'm just like, how is this a thing?
The new black can destroy an enchantment card. Yep, that came here too. Also about 17% inclusion on that one too. Pretty insane.
Yeah.
This set was filled with those cards that like slot into that 96 through 99 slot in your deck, like the really good, useful role players. And that's fun. Like sometimes it's more interesting finding those cards that work really well in your deck and make it function smoothly than it is finding the absolute home runs that are just obviously bombs.
Right.
Well, and one thing too that was kind of interesting about Zendikar Rising was this was the first time we ever saw Commander precons to accompany a regular standard set. So we saw Anawan the Ruin Thief. Yeah. That has about 900 decks or so, which is kind of cool to see. Like there's sustained Commander demand outside of those normal sets, not just around like the precon time. We're so used to seeing Commander precons once a year. Seeing them more often now was kind of weird, but actually it's been fairly successful so far, I would say. Like there's more Anawan decks than there are Rin and Sari for some reason.
Yeah.
Can't explain
inexplicable.
How it works.
Yeah. With that said though, the other precon deck, Obun Muldaya Ancestor, only has about 400, and it's really competing in the landfall slot. And I think that that's also kind of a lesson, kind of going back to the product fatigue thing that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Like, landfall was such a crowded commander space to play around in that a lot of commanders also, even from the same, like, bevy of sets, I guess, kind of started overshadowing each other there, too. Yeah. Sort of like we've seen with Dominaria, for example, where a lot of really cool legends came in that set, but they were just overshadowed by the heaviest of hitters that they didn't get quite as much attention as they might have in a set that had possibly fewer legends playing around in that same area.
Sounds like something very similar to what's going to happen in this next set that we talk about, where there's so many legends, nobody gets their chance to shine.
What could it be? I think that's everything that came out in Magic this year. Can't possibly think of anything else.
So yeah, we're moving on now from Zendikar to Commander Legends, which had over 70 new legendary creatures, obviously a bunch of partners, so 1,500 plus total partner combinations going on now.
RIP EDH rec.
Yeah, our programmers have nearly fully recovered from the aneurysm that this information provided to them. I say nearly, but we got through it. We actually have a video on our YouTube if you want to check out how it is that EDH Rec is handling all of those partner pairs. It's pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of stuff happening here. We talked about it on our last episode, but so far we're seeing that Obeka and Aurelmi of the Dead Tide, those are the two most popular commanders from the set so far. So the Grixis can stop your turn, and then also the Encore craziness going on in Dimir too. Some pretty cool stuff going on there. And then the top partners we saw were Sakashima of 1,000 Faces and Rograk, son of Roga, or as Matt likes to refer to it. Matt, I'll let you take this one because I still can't get over it.
The Rugrat?
The Rugrat.
Dana's the one who brought up Rugrat. I appreciate the credit though, but I'll pass it to Dana.
The baby Yoda of the set.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
The child.
So I noticed some apprehension when we said that we were getting to Commander Legends. Olivia, do you have thoughts?
I have thoughts about everything. What would make you think otherwise? I won't lie. I was terrified of this set. Probably because of like what we were talking about earlier with 2019. Some of those legendaries were, I mean, Chulainn, Korvald, it's a bit much. Like, we get it. You want people to run these for your... Okay, great. Cool. Very awesome. I was just kind of, you know, scared, I guess, of those styles of just like, how about we make it really good and staple draw a card onto it? Of that not being what was going to be, or I should say, I didn't want that to be everything that Commander Legends was, right? Like, well, let's just see if we can turn it up to 11. It's like, please don't. And it doesn't feel like they did. Like, there are definitely good things in there. There are definitely things that, like, I'm seeing Hull Breacher in 35% of the decks it can get. Yeah, I get that. There's some real good stuff in there. Opposition Agent clearly shows this was designed before the pandemic, so you can see that there. But I'm overall happy with it. There's nothing that makes me be, like, completely upset or anything. I think Jeweled Lotus was a card that came out, I guess, it did come out. It's got an ability to truly like end a game real fast, which kind of isn't the point, I don't think, for non-CDH. I mean, I don't know that CDH is necessarily to get it over fast, but I think that I'm pretty like neutral positive on Commander Legends. Like, it is a set that came out. There's a lot of cool stuff. There's stuff I don't care about, and nothing makes me want to burn all the boxes I see or anything like that, you know?
It did seem like the thing that we were all holding our breath.
Yeah, about. There was a lot of potential for this to go bad in myriad ways. And I feel like it kind of dodged all those bullets.
Yeah, we all had the same feelings, especially about partner. Like, as soon as we saw partner was coming back, we're like, oh my gosh.
Greatest fear was that there was going to be a card that just is like partners with legendary. And it's just like basically like add a color. And it was like, please, God, no. I was like, oh, no. Well,
Piper, but that thankfully was fairly tame.
EDH Rec's greatest fear was Prismatic Piper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We had some nicknames for it.
Lol JK, add a color. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think Jeweled Lotus or Hull Breacher or Opposition Agent as well are necessarily good for the format.
Right.
But yeah. I don't think they're necessarily like terrible either. I don't think any of them hurt anything actively.
Exactly. I don't think they brought anything good. So like, they're not bringing a whole bunch to the table like, wow, this is really going to improve gameplay or like how we play this format or anything stylistically. At the same time, they aren't like deal breakers, right? They're not like this is so far and beyond what's okay or what people want to play with or are trying to do that there needs to be a huge outcry. Like, they are certainly cards that have places. It just may or may not be in your deck, and that's okay. They're not gonna, it's not going to be something so disadvantageous to not run them. So I, you know, it's okay at that point.
Well, I mean, thankfully, like, when it comes to like must plays, those are the closest that we have.
Yeah.
This set had so many more cards than just Hull Breach and Opposition Agent, and most of them are great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it is fun that if there's a theme that you want to play in your deck, there's probably at least like two or three cards in Commander Legends for every single one of those decks. And I love that about the set. Yeah, it was very nervous. Like, it was a very ambitious set. And I do think overall they did a good job with it.
Yeah.
It was also, I mean, at the least, like, bringing pirates back as well.
Yeah.
Making, you know, all of those. You get to spend a lot more time with those fun things. The Battle Bond land cycle was completed finally. And they're showing up, like, nearly 40% of decks that can play the Battle Bond lands are so far. That number may dwindle. You know, the original Battle Bond lands cycle from the actual Battle Bond set wound up around, like, 20% inclusion rate or so.
Oh, wow.
So maybe they'll land somewhere similar, yeah, or who knows what would happen. But, like, there's a lot to celebrate about the set too. The reprints were also really, really fun. I still think I prefer some of the reprint quality going on in Jumpstart personally, but it's also nice to see how well executed that was as well.
For sure.
So yeah, it was the holding the breath moment and then being like, all right, we can ease into this a little bit. That kind of feels it out with Commander Legends for me, I think.
For sure. And I should clarify that, like, my it's not necessarily like I think that it was a bad set. Like, I'm with you. Like, it was solid. It was totally solid. I'm not upset about it. There was some stuff that was like, dang, you know, it could be cooler if we had a little bit more of X, Y, or Z. There are some things that, you know, again, the three cards we keep mentioning that are like, all right, like, you didn't have to print those and this still would have been a good set, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's always easy to poke holes in all the things that are improvable and because you want to leave the stuff that's good behind. It's like, well, we don't need to mention that because it's good, it's already fine. So yeah, I there's nothing I don't think to be super upset about in the set, and I'm totally happy with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is just also, you know, like we said going into this, there's so many legends here that a lot of them are going to probably end up being a little bit buried, and
yeah,
don't let them get buried. There's some really fantastic Commander Legends designs going on with these legendary creatures and stuff, and so I hope that they also get the chance to breathe.
For sure.
I mean, not just product fatigue, but legend fatigue. Like, I have looked through this entire set 5 times with, like, I've sat down specifically to look at the set. I still couldn't tell you what half the legends are. Like,
same.
This set is just going to suffer so much from just every legend out positioning some other legend. Like, that is probably like my biggest gripe with the set, is there's just so much going on. Like, there's going to be just even more stuff overshadowed.
I think at the same time though, as time passes and, you know, we get to see a little bit more of this, that once, you know, we have these big runaways, like, this is a really obvious choice, you want to do, you know, Sakishima for X, Y, or Z, like, once those kind of get filtered out and we kind of see who the runaways are, it'll be easier to go back and be like, okay, but, like, nobody's touched these two legends. Like, what can I do here? How do I explore this space? I think that while, again, maybe just because of the sheer volume of everything, it feels like the air has been sucked out of the room by some of these bigger, more powerful cards just, like, on their faces, it does still give us one of the things that we ask for constantly, which is the option of having some creativity and doing things that shouldn't necessarily work, and being able to explore a lot of these combinations that are going to get overlooked by cards that may or may not just be, like, easier to deal with or build around on their face. So I think that right now it's going to be a little tough to kind of suss out exactly what we are getting with Commander Legends. But over time, we're going to start seeing some really creative builds around the things that are getting overshadowed right now.
Mm-hmm. Dana will have a chance to be a hipster with cards printed in 2020
because
nobody's playing them.
I was running this combo, like, back when the deck or when the set came out. So, oh, did you find that on EDH Rec? That's cute.
That's amazing. And also, Olivia, listening to you, I full on had a moment where I thought I was listening to a podcast and I forgot that I'm supposed to respond.
I was thinking, you are so much smarter than us. You just need to take, you should like just make content or something.
All gonna lose our jobs here.
No, stop it. You guys deal with numbers. People just, I don't know, listen to me for some unknown reason.
Unknown to you only. It's an absolute treat to be able to. You're a gift. It's great. So moving away from some of the numbers, now that we've kind of like oriented ourselves to like, okay, this was the timeline of the stuff that actually occurred within 2020 and seeing some of the most popular stuff, I kind of want to, you know, ask how we navigated the year. Like, Olivia, what are some decks that you personally built? What actually grabbed your attention from the year most, would you say?
So all of the decks I built were from cards that are not from this year. Oh, wait, no, that's not true. I do have one that's actually from Korea. So I built my Atraxa Enchantress deck, which is shut up and let me draw my deck.
It's effective at that, by the way.
So it's very good at it, but it lets me end the game on my terms. I can either, you know, Opalescence and wipe the board and everybody else, or I just mill myself out and it's been like, it's been fun, bye. So the Atraxa Enchantress, I did a Yannick Nakara loop critters. Basically just get like, of course, all of the, I just took the deck apart like yesterday, so all the names of the cards are gone. But basically using Yannick and then two other exile when enters the battlefield, just make these giant critter loops that go on ad infinitum until you've decided, I've gained enough life, I've made you lose enough life, etc., etc. I built General Tazri allies because I was excited for Zendikar, and I was like, there'll be more allies in this. There were not a lot of allies in that. So worked out fine. The deck's really fun, so it's all just enter the battlefield tribal basically. And I built a Kelsine Obosh deck as well, using Obosh as a companion because I hated the mechanic. I was like, fine, I'm gonna exploit it. And then they changed the rules and the RC went along with the rules change and the deck wasn't that great anymore and I tore it apart. This has honestly been the year of half built decks for me. I have Rin and Sari half built, I have a Morophon Zombies half built, a Wizard Tribal half built, a Thalice that I'm just deciding how much I want to take out of the Taysa deck to put in a Thalice deck, and a Fire Song.
Oh,
she's so amazing. And a Fire Song Sun Speaker that I've been working on. So I have a bunch of decks that are like in progress, and I only actually like made, I think, four this year.
Nice. Well, so speaking for myself, one of the decks that I did build was, of course, Thalice, our preview card, who, as soon as we made a video previewing the card, we realized, oh no, we made a severe mistake by not having Olivia on to help us preview this card that she's immediately going to cosplay.
Correct. That fast.
But she is absolutely rad. Black white tokens, I'm having an absolute ball with it. I also personally went with an Elegith plus Sakashima deck where I can just scry like six and draw six cards.
Yeah, so you never scry in that deck, you just draw cards.
He just draws cards. Yeah, be real.
It's really, really good. I tried out the Cisei Shrines for a while. Olivia, I also kind of went with you trying out some of the companions just to see how I feel about it. I don't think any of my companion decks will be surviving the rotation because I didn't the experience. From myself, but also how it kind of put an onus on my opponents to track what I was doing. It just felt like a kind of weird situation. I've complained about companions before. We might again later. But then also my family built some new decks, which was really cool. My mom made a new Kangi Skywarden deck, and my stepdad made Rin and Sari. So there was actually a pretty decent amount of brewing for us on this side, too. My younger brother even made Bruvac Mill. And it hurts in my soul for all of that. But there was still a lot of brewing, which I take as a good sign. For
Well, Joe, you also made a new deck. I mean, granted, the commander is older than you are, but you made a Martin Stromgald deck, too.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I did.
Oh, my God.
Which was a challenge Joey had this year, which was to make a commander that only existed in the old frame. And he managed to do it.
He did it.
Look at you go.
So yes, I like building new stuff. And I like that you guys keep me in check to make sure that I also remember my roots, apparently. So thank you. Matt and Dana, what about you guys? Matt, what did you end up, what grabbed your attention most this year?
Well, you say that we encourage you and keep you on your toes when it comes to like remembering that old cards exist. I just remember new cards exist. I probably did more deck turnover this year than I would have if you two weren't around. So I did make Ukiman Khazar. I had a Muldrotha +1/+1 counters deck. And as soon as I saw Ukiman Khazar, I knew instantly like, okay, this is an easy transition because the theme is there. The colors are there. 100% going to do it. I also made a Riel the Everwise deck. I had a Niv-Mizzet Perrin deck, and that deck just oopsed into so many wins that I never really enjoyed it. Riel the Everwise has been a little bit more fun to play around with. There's a little more uniqueness to the Izzet colors. So I enjoy that deck quite a bit. I also made, I know The commander isn't from 2020, but I made an Alila Artful Provocateur deck, my historic tribal deck, which has been a lot of fun. I know Jason Alt, who is our content manager at EDHREC, does not like the deck because I play three board wipes. But I also built another commander, or another deck, I should say, not from this year, but Vivictus Asmati, which had nothing really to do with 2020, but that deck just makes me feel feelings of playing, you know, 7-mana 4/4s, and so that's why I built it, and it's just a fun deck at least. But I did probably the 99 of my decks changed so much this year because guff that I received. I built a spreadsheet. Dana just rubbed off on me too much, and I built a spreadsheet of all the cards that I added from Zendikar Rising. That's where I'm at this year.
I have to say, nice job, I think it's funny that you mentioned that on our show notes, just since nobody else can see this. Mentions that Riel the Everwise doesn't draw hate or oops into wins. Having played against Jeremy Knoll's Riel the Everwise deck, if I see that, I see Punch Club and know that I'm about to get hit for too many, and I don't like that deck and will come for it.
Well,
yeah, watch your back, Matt.
Yeah, knives out.
I'll make sure I bring it out and remind you next time you come on to twitch.tv/EDHRecCast, stream some games with us.
Nice.
I'll make sure to bring it out just so that you can know, like, not every Riel is a bad Riel.
We'll see about that.
We'll see.
The Riel housewives of Dranith County or
Joey.
I went there. All right, Dana, how about you? You are also kind of very selective with your decks. Did you build new stuff in 2020?
I was very productive this year. You and Matt had kind of challenged me to build a commander with three or more colors and a commander that was new and popular. So I just combined them and built Kenrith, all exalted.
Oh, gosh.
which was fairly fun. I've since scrapped it. The reason was whenever I would sit down and pull it out, people would be like, oh, Kenrith. I built a Kenrith deck too. And as dumb as that is, it just made me not want to play it. I recognize that's a ridiculous reason to not want to play a deck, but it just bothered me. So that one did get scrapped. I built a Timurith or Murder King Infect deck that was relatively fun, but it needs an overhaul, so I might convert it to Jury Master the Review. I'm still kind of tinkering with whether or not it can be salvaged. I built an Adelaide's Combat Tricks / Voltron deck. Ooh. That's probably permanently been converted to Krom and Kedis, so I now have a partner deck as well. But that one was a blast. It was a concept I've been messing around with for like a year or two, trying to figure out how to make an Izzet Combat Trick deck. And I finally made it work, and I think it plays even better with Krom and Kedis at the top. So that one is definitely sticking around. I built an Athreos Pestilence deck that I'm still kind of figuring out, but I like it quite a bit. And I built a Veto the Dusk Rose big black mana deck that's been a lot of fun, which is also a new commander, but it's not terribly popular from the core set. So I put a lot of new decks into actual cardboard this year, and I'm going to keep at least probably three of them.
I'm just so happy that, Dana, this feels like a year of growth for you, especially because you used to never build anything from the current year. And I think I heard at least three new commanders among the stuff you just listed. And I'm just really happy.
It's pretty easy to find obscure commanders when 700 of them come out in the calendar year.
Right.
There you go. There you go. That, absolutely. Yeah. So that's how we personally navigated the year. But Lynn, just sort of by the numbers, I kind of wanted to go through as well, because like based on the numbers, it definitely feels like the set of the year, if we were to name one, has to probably go to Commander Legends. Like that's going to take the cake for everyone. But is that what you personally feel was your favorite set of the year? Is it your favorite, or what was your favorite? Olivia, we can start with you. What are you thinking about the sets in terms of like their popularity versus how you personally?
Right. I almost don't know if like I had a favorite set this year. I liked a lot of them for different reasons, but I don't feel like any of them was this like just total runaway, like, oh my God, I love it. If pressed, honestly, I think Ikoria was pretty sweet. I may be an outlier. I love the mutate mechanic. I think it's genius. I think it's really cool. And it's really, really stupid how good it works in Commander.
Don't let Joey hear you say that.
That's fine. He's going to hear it and he's going to have to deal with it. So I think there's just so many weird ways it can get used. Like you can mutate onto Mirage Mirror. Why not? That's the kind of dumb stuff I'm here for. It was clearly designed for Arena, as were all of the counter things of it. Just like, because really, the lack of explanation and how it works, you know, is obviously a little touch and go. But that being said, I think it's actually really fun and you can do some really stupid, cool things with it. And that's the kind of stuff I like seeing in Commander. So I liked Mutate a lot, which makes me like Ikoria a lot. I feel like that's almost where I lean. It was just, it had a lot of new, fresh stuff that was fun to play with.
So I'm just, I don't know, like on the subject of Mutate, there are a couple of things that you like never hear in a Commander game, or at least I personally have never heard before in a Commander game. Like I've never heard someone say, oh, I will decline to draw the two extra cards from my Consecrated Sphinx, right, for example. Just, it doesn't, that never happens.
Well,
but also a thing I've never heard
in your
before.
Library. I mean, or you only have one.
Right. I've just never heard it. But another thing I've also never heard in a Commander game is I understand exactly how Mutate works in this particular scenario. Never heard it before. But I'm surprised to hear you like Ikoria so much. I'm surprised to hear you like Ikoria as much as you do, given that that's also the set that brought us companions.
I know. I didn't say I liked everything about it. Companions was unnecessary. I don't like the mechanic and I wish it didn't exist. And I have many thoughts and feelings about it, most of which I posted on twitter.com. That being said, I can overlook companions, which I never used and don't care about and don't really have a lot of relevance in a Commander game for the mechanic that is really cool and really inventive. I mean, what, companion was on what, 10 cards out of the whole set? Mm-hmm. Pretty easy to dismiss at that point.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Dana, what are you thinking about for favorite set of the year versus popularity?
I think just the sheer amount of useful things in Commander Legends makes it really tough to dismiss. I just found so many cards from the set that went into my decks, and that's without even delving into stuff that I'm like, this would be a fun deck to build, but I have something similar. There's just so many options. I don't know how I would pick something else. And that's even before we get into the fact that it probably would have been a lot of fun to draft, and we didn't get a chance to do that at all this year.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, as much as I enjoyed like the Battle Bond and Conspiracy sets, I liked them even more because they were so much fun to play in the way they were designed to be played. We didn't get to do that with Commander Legends. So I would imagine I would like it even more, and will hopefully like it even more if we get a chance at some point in the next year to actually go to LGSs and go to events and play it the way it was designed to get played.
Well, gotcha. If you want to talk about sets that never got a chance to be played the way they were meant to be played, Jumpstart didn't either. And that's just because it was not available. And I think Commander Legends, we're going to see decks, we're going to see those cards all over the place. I think if the distribution were the same for Jumpstart as Commander Legends, I think Jumpstart might have been just as impactful, just because of all the new things they were putting out there, all the reprints they were putting in there.
Yeah.
And just the fact that, like, I really, when I read how the Jumpstart limited format was meant to be played, I was genuinely excited. I love the game Smash Up, and it's kind of the same thing. Like, the spirit is there. And I was very, very excited. The set of the year would have been Jumpstart for me if people were able to play Jumpstart. Yeah. Since that didn't happen, though, like, it's kind of de facto over to Commander Legends, just because of all the reasons that we've already stated throughout this entire episode. Like, there's so much going on. There's so many good cards. They're finishing off Battle Bond lands. They reprinted some great cards, and the new cards were great. And like, the biggest thing too is Partner came back, and like we said earlier, it wasn't as all of our fears about Partner ended up being maybe not all for nothing.
I was gonna say, I was like, all is really aggressive.
Yeah, not all. A lot of our fears about Partner, at least they showed a lot of discretion, which I definitely appreciated, was, yes, we're bringing back Partners. We learned our lesson from last time, so we're going to dial it back quite a bit. And that, to me, made Partner so much easier. And we said this on the podcast a few times before. Partner was so much more successful this time around than last.
Yeah, I won't
disagree
with that.
Complete agreement. Yeah. Disagree.
No, I said I won't disagree with that. The Partner's more successful this time. Yeah.
I misheard. Cool, because I was about to say, Matt, I'm in complete agreement with you about the whole jump sort everything, and so it's just like, oh, are we about to have a scrap? We're not about to have a scrap. We agree.
No scraps.
No scraps.
Yeah. So then, in terms of the Commander of the Year and Card of the Year, looking through the popularity, there's some kind of interesting stuff going down. You know, as we saw, for example, Calamax, by just the sheer numbers, does technically have the most decks that were built this year, about like nearly 1,700, I think it was. Yeah. But it's also many months older and has therefore had a lot more time to gather data. You know, it it got like to 1700 decks in about 8 months. Compare that to Omnath Locus of Creation, which got 1300 decks in the span of about 3 months, even during the Quarren times.
Yeah.
So Omnath, I think by the numbers, is definitely the thing that will, you know, eclipse Kalamax in the fullness of time and become sort of the marquee commander of the year, I would say. But Olivia, is that your personal favorite commander? I'm going to guess not, because I think I already know what your favorite commander from this year might be.
Oh, it's...
I think.
Yeah, you do. It's the least, far and away. No, there's okay. There's no contest. I don't care. I know everyone's like, that's not very inspired. That card doesn't do that much. I don't care. It's my favorite. I like it. It's fun. It's my play style. It's everything I want, and it rewards me for playing bad things like Smothering Tithe. I'm all in.
It's absolutely rad. It might be one of my favorites as well, although I am really, really enjoying Elegith too.
I believe that.
Matt, how about you? are you a little salty about all of the cards?
Listen,
because of my wonderful
Elegith? We're not going to talk about it right now.
All right, Matt, what about you? Do you have a personal favorite commander of the year?
I think I would have to say my personal favorite commander of the year, just because it's one that I kind of built a new deck around, would be either Riel or Ukemen Khazzer.
Nice.
No matter what type of magic you like to play in Commander, there was a commander for that. So, like, I don't think I can pick just one. I'll say the two that I actually built decks for, but that's kind of a cop-out with this.
That's cool. And Dana?
I will pick just one.
No?
And it'll be one of Matt's. I'm going to say Riel the Everwise this year. And for purely kind of clinical reasons, I think it is a really interesting open-ended commander. It can be built kind of in a degenerate way if you want to play really highly competitive decks just to like filter down and find your combo. You can play it relatively casually like Matt does. You can build around, like put it in a deck, in a Wheels deck or in a Madness deck or in a Reanimator deck. You can play it at a Wheels deck. I just think it's a really flexible commander that can be played a bunch of ways and it can go in a bunch of decks. I think just as far as designs go, it has a whole lot of flexibility, and I like that aspect of it, how well built I think it is.
It's a very versatile card.
All right, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So moving from Commander to the card of the year, I think we saw that one of the most popular ones so far was definitely Fierce Guardianship, showing up in 25% of eligible decks. Not only that, but also we had the Battle Bond land cycle finally get completed too, and the rate of adoption among those has also been really huge. So those are probably, you know, just going by a number standpoint, those would be our cards of the year or something like that. But personally, where are you guys finding the most love for cards that go into the 99?
Hellkite Courser, 100%.
I
saw that card and like the Timmy and me just got so freaking excited just to slam a 6-drop dragon and just not give any cares for what you guys think.
All right.
Like it's just a big, yeah, it's just like a big fancy mythic. If I opened that card in a pack, I would have 1,000 just like jumped and just been so excited. Like it just does all these big, crazy things. It's super fun. In the words of Joseph M. Schultz, I'm here for it.
Do you need a shiny one? Because I have one.
I will gladly take it off your hands.
Okay, we'll chat.
We'll talk offline.
Yeah, we'll talk offline. I have to go with the numbers here. I'm sorry. I know it's super utilitarian and very basic. The Battle Bond land cycle getting completed is my absolute lifeblood. I have wanted them since Battle Bond came out. I was like, why aren't these in every commander pre-con? They are commander lands. That's all there is to it. And we should have them. So having that cycle finished out was what I wanted this year. Like, I was, of course, you know, completely irrationally terrified that they were going to put fetch lands in Commander Legends, and I was not about that. So seeing that we have a Battle Bond land cycle is just, oh, it's my everything. That's what I've been most excited for this year.
Awesome.
So I tried to be subjective on Commander of the Year. I am not being subjective on Guard of the Year. Juska's Will has been amazing whenever I've cast it. And it also, you know, it's good in almost any situation, but if you can do dumb things with it, like copy it and then, you know, use all the mana to cast it from your graveyard and copy the copy again, and all of a sudden you're sitting at like 40 some mana in your mana pool and you have, you know, a dozen cards exiled that you can all cast that turn, it's hilarious. It is an amazing card. I love everything about it. I'm going to put 4 copies in all my decks and we'll be casting whenever possible. It's been a blast to play, as well as I think being a very good card, and it is undoubtedly the pick for card of the year.
4 copies in all your decks, huh?
I didn't say that out loud. Sorry, said the wrong part. Just one copy. And I'll
when he exiles three copies to the first one, that's what we'll know.
He's turned it into a companion. We have to check his deck to make sure it meets the requirements. Right.
It's the companion zone.
That's right. I said
Jessica's
it.
Jessica's Will if you have four copies of Jessica's Will in your deck.
There you go.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. All right. So looking through all of that, our feelings about the year, I don't know. Like, this was a tumultuous year for sure. There's a whole lot that happened. It was a very crowded year as well. What do you think was maybe the best part of it? Just sort of looking back on this entirety of 2020, what are the highlights? What are the lowlights, would you say?
Well, it's kind of weird, but I think I played more Magic this year than I would have otherwise in person, like having to go to the LGS. So it's kind of weird, but like being able to play over webcam and that being such a thing that's done by the widespread, you know, population of Magic players, that's actually gotten me to be playing more Magic than I think I would have if I had to get in my car, drive however far to an LGS, sit down, whether it's playing on stream with you folks, whether it's, you know, calling up some buddies and playing that way. I've actually played probably more Magic than I would have otherwise. And it's kind of crazy to think about that, but it's also fairly true. So yeah, just the amount of games that I've gotten to play this year has been pretty significant.
I'll co-sign to that, obviously. And then also, like, just because you're getting so much more exposure and so much more time playing, like, you do get to see different things. And now that there are so many people streaming, since I do it as well, friends, like, you can see a lot of different metas. You get to see what people's understanding of, like, a power level is. You can see what some people consider CDH, or, like, what you can explore these things without having to get mired necessarily in them. Like, maybe you don't want to play CDH, but you can't just, like, go and randomly watch CDH games. Well, you can now and see if that is something you want to try. Like, you get a lot of exposure to things that maybe you wouldn't get the chance at an LGS or just at, you know, a Magic Fest by being able to do it remotely. And that's pretty sweet, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you get exposure to them in a way that, at least for me, has registered on me mentally in a way it doesn't at a Magic Fest. At a Magic Fest, everything is so chaotic and frantic, and there's just so much happening that, like, even if you do see a different thing that you're not used to seeing, a different, you know, meta play style, a different deck, whatever, it was kind of tough to internalize that and, like, right, really think about what that meant, because there was just so much happening. You know, that you're playing, you know, 15 matches over the course of a day or whatever it is. It's oftentimes very just insane. When you're playing on webcam with, you know, one or two games per night or something, it's much easier to, like, kind of take it all in and think about, oh, that's much different than the way I usually play at my shop. That's a much different take on that deck than the one I usually see. So at least for me, not only has it been really cool to see all of this stuff, it's been way easier to kind of be able to mentally bring it all in and think about it and mull it over and just learn from the experience.
Well, and it's nice too when, like, you see somebody.
I really love that.
Oh, sorry, Joy. It's nice too when you see somebody, you know, playing a webcam game, whatever it is, and you hear about the card that you've never heard of, and then it's like, oh, well, I'm right here. I can just, like, check it out and make sure it is what I think it is. Oh God, would that work in this? Like, having that kind of exposure to it, but also not in a setting where it is so frantic and there's constantly something going on, or blue players, please come, you know, like, whatever it is. Like, you don't have the announcements, like, breaking your chain of thought. It's really nice to be able to have that. Like, there's so many things that I've learned this year for sure that, you know, never would have made it into my realm of consciousness had it not been for the way things are. So yeah, there's silver linings to it for sure.
Well, and I think just the community really came together in spite of everything. Like, Olivia, if we didn't start streaming games on our end, I don't think we would have gotten to become as close friends with you just because, you know, we stream games together. We had you on the show. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think the community really came together just as a whole and said, you know what? Yeah. Situation kind of sucks, but we're going to rally. We're going to play a bunch of games. Like, we're going to figure it out. And
yeah,
I've gotten to play a ton of games with people I would not have gotten to meet or play with otherwise. Yep. And it's just, that's probably, like, one of the coolest things, I think, is just, not just do I get to play a lot of games personally, but I got to play games with a lot of really cool people.
Yeah, very much. This the my favorite part of this year, hectic though it has obviously been. Even we went to video this year, which was awesome. Like, the podcast is on video now. Yay. That was amazing. We started streaming and that has been such a joy. But really, the coolest thing about this year has absolutely been the fact that the community remembered to put the gathering in Magic the Gathering. Mm. We couldn't help but do it. And that's just an absolutely shining thing for me from this year that is really going to carry me on into 2021. I tell you what.
And if I can be so bold, it was Commander that did that. Like, it was our format.
It was.
Like, let's be real.
1,000%.
It was us.
Absolutely.
There it is. Commander player saved Magic. We did it.
Dare I ask if there were any lowlights of the year?
Whatever do you mean?
I mean, I had to cancel my flight to Seattle. And I mean, I know I was very excited to see you guys in person again. Olivia, I'm sure you probably would have been at Magic Fest Seattle. Just saying. So like the fact that we had to do it over webcam instead of in person, like, anybody who's met me for more than 20 seconds knows I'm a hugger. So the lack of
the
hugs that were
given
this year. Hugs
will be distributed.
Oh my God. We would have had a hug off to see whose ribs would have cracked first.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. The external stuff was definitely a downer this year, missing out on events. And you know, I guess I feel kind of bad saying that because people just generally had miserable, horrible years, whether it's, you know, just losing jobs or being sick or in some cases having death in the family from COVID. So it was absolutely a rough year just kind of in the abstract. Game-wise, it's been mentioned, but it's worth mentioning again, companions weren't great in a lot of ways. I think that was a pretty big issue, although it's kind of become a non-issue now, so I guess it's
basically,
not an ongoing thing, but it was definitely a problem at the time, and it's not something I still like very much.
I, as not necessarily speaking as a member of the CAG, but I wish what we could have done was something akin to what Canadian Highlander did, of just saying, hey, mechanic doesn't work, enjoy the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of where I fall right now as well.
But what do I know? Wait. Not my monkeys, not my circus. I can't ban things. I can't unban things. I just...
Would you say that that's maybe your biggest low light of the year was the companions? Or is there something
else? I don't know that was the biggest low light. Honestly, like, I know this horse is long dead, but the Secret Lair Walking Dead, my only problem, my sole problem, mechanically unique, mechanically unique / the black border, had they been mechanically unique in silver, never a peep from me, wouldn't have cared, wouldn't have, just pass it on by. That I had a problem with, but that necessarily wasn't a problem with Magic or our format. So as far as that going, companions was just kind of like, what are we doing here? Outside of that, honestly, I don't really have any like big commander failings or terrible things in this year. It just, all I have to go back to is like, we came together, commander players as a community, and we're able to like continue playing, figuring out ways, being our creative janky selves of like, hey, you know what? A wooden spoon and stack of books will hold the webcam. Yeah, let's play a game. That's what warmed my heart this year, and I just want to focus on that.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it does feel a little strange for us to have talked about the positives.
And of course.
Like, ooh, lowlights. But no, like the positives, none of these lowlights are overshadowing any of the positives at all. Like even one of the things that EDH Rec was the most afraid about this year was there are a bunch of new partners. And we still managed to get through it. So like that is a absolute highlight for sure. Was a lowlight, turned into something good. That's absolutely what we focus on.
Yeah.
Man, I guess that just kind of leaves me with a question. I asked it at the beginning of just like, are we leaning towards a thumbs up or thumbs down? How are we feeling? But Olivia, I'll ask you first. Do you think that the year of Commander was a success?
I think that the year of Commander wasn't negative. Okay. I mean, it's just, again, with how much stuff came up and came out this year, and so much of it could easily be incorporated by Commander players. How, like, even if they just scaled back for the year of Commander, just being having more pre-cons, it still, like, we had a lot of stuff come out for us this year. And it seems more and more that Commander's becoming a design focus, which personally I'm not crazy about, and you know, you can have whatever opinion you want and that's fine, but I think that it's kind of like every year is becoming the year of Commander, so this one felt like it was too, like, it was a lot. There's nothing that was so format warping that I'm upset about it. There was nothing so format warping that was super great and just completely like beacon of light. Like, this is going to save us. This is exactly what we needed. There's nothing I have to complain about this. I didn't hate it, but I'm okay if we like, if we scaled back a little for 2021.
I think talking about how this is the new normal moving forward is a really good point, because this was the year of Commander, but I would guess when we reconvene at the end of 2021, I don't know if the conversation is going to be much different aside from Commander Legends. We're going to get the same amount of sets. We're going to get probably roughly the same amount of Legends in most of those sets. I think that's the way they're designing moving forward. So instead of Commander Legends, we'll be talking about Modern Horizons 2, which is still going to have a ton of Commander-ready product in it as well. So, yeah, it was the year of Commander, but I'm going to guess 2021 is unofficially going to be the same as is 2022 and 2023. And I think as long as there's this many Commander players out there, they're just going to keep serving us product. So this is just the way I think it's going to be in the future.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm cool with that.
We joked a few times about, oh, well, we just did a set review. Join in next week when we're going to do another set review. Which, like, that's all well and good. But, like, at a certain point in time, like, I appreciate and I'm glad that 2020 was the year of Commander. Yeah. Now I want to recover and be able to appreciate everything that we got, because I don't, like we've said four or five times on the show already, we haven't had a chance to appreciate everything that we got this year. So I hope that they at least, like, maybe not hit the brakes, but like let their foot off the gas at least. I do agree with you, Olivia. Like, I would love if they would stop putting Commander plants into standard legal sets, because I mean, we saw what Omnath did with Standard for a while, and Historic, and every other 60 card format. So like, I at a certain point, I think the power is going to be so pushed for Commander it leaks over into other formats, like we saw with Companion that ruined, like, we had a vintage ban this year because of Companion. Like, that hadn't happened since Scheherazade. That's so long ago. So like, it's just, it's, I hope that as great as what everything that we got in 2020 was, I hope that we have a chance just to slow down and like smell the roses a little bit.
I love the way that you phrased that. There were, I think, if I'm counting correctly, 175 new commanders this year. But that's just it. I don't know if I got that number correct. Because of just how much there was. And this is also just kind of a year of density for it, too, for sure. Because there's a lot that might get buried among that. So it's a year that, you know, a little bit of distance from to be able to continue digging through is going to yield even more results. And we definitely need that time to be able to appreciate it and unearth all of those fun, just phenomenal designs, so that we can appreciate it, just like you said, smelling the roses. And I think overall, though, I am happier with where Commander is maybe at in 2020 than I was at the end of 2019 as well. Even if I am a little bit like, ooh, is this going to be a bit of the new normal in the following years? I think overall I am like happier in 2020 where Magic is at than I was, you know, I was a lot more suspicious at the end of 2019, I think.
And I don't mean to sound negative, like when I say, like, you know, here are the things, because I feel like I'm waffling so much. At the same time, it's like you've said, and like we've said this entire podcast, there's been so much. Like, I don't even have my head wrapped around the entirety of it yet. Like, I feel like I can't necessarily have a very strong positive negative when it's like, I still don't know half of the cards that came out this year. Like, I couldn't tell you, like you said, there's 170 legendaries. I would be impressed if I could name 50 of them right now. I would, no kidding. It would blow my mind. I'd be like, man, I really retained this and had no idea. It's just, there's so much. Like, I don't know if I have a really solid feeling on it because I haven't even explored everything that happened this year.
Well, like, ice cream is great, but like, if someone keeps handing you ice cream and an ice cream cone and ice cream and ice cream and then says, how was your ice cream? You're going to at some point say, that was just a lot of ice cream.
Sounds like you just don't like ice cream and you need to shut up.
You need to buck up, man.
Trust me, I like ice cream. No one's going to look at me and question my love of ice cream. But yeah, like at some point, no matter how much you like it, when there's just that much of it, you just need a breather. And I think we're all kind of at that point. We loved a lot of the ice cream this year, but we've just had enough ice cream for the moment.
Can I please look at a vegetable? That would be awesome.
Right.
Just any fiber at all.
Prove they still exist. That's all I'm asking.
Oh, man. That's really, really great. So, yeah, overall, we are really happy with some stuff in 2020. It's really cool to have gone over everything that has happened this year, even if it is difficult to do so sometimes because, as aforementioned, time is a lie now.
It sure is.
So, Olivia, we really appreciate you joining us so that we can sort through that timeline and figure out where we are where Commander is at. With this, I think that we probably ought to call this episode to a close. But, Olivia, if folks are interested in seeing your content, your gameplay streams, or your upcoming Talise cosplay, as we know is definitely going to happen, where is it on the interwebs that they can find you?
So they can find me on Twitter.com. My last name, Gobert Hicks, GobertHicks. And then I stream Commander gameplay Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, probably more as time starts allowing, on Twitch at twitch.tv/affinityartifacts. And you can find Joey there some nights talking about how great Aaron is and getting a lot of tokens on the board with Thalise, which should have been more. But it's fine. Yeah, it's all good.
No hard feelings. No hard
zero.
Feelings,
not, no a feelings. Anyway, not a one.
Anyway, fellas, if our listeners would like to get in touch with us, where can they find you? Answer quickly before Olivia throttles me.
Oh, I'm going to take my time then because I want that throttling to happen.
But you She's going to reach to the webcam and choke me. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, you can find me at Mathemus55 on Twitter. That's MathimuS55. You can find all three of us and Olivia some nights, twitch.tv/EDHRetcast. I mean, apparently, if you're a CAG member, you just got to come on, hang out, play some games with us. So definitely tune into those Wednesday evenings. We have all sorts of great guests. Olivia definitely is one of those great category
oh
guests.
Good I was gonna say Olivia's a guest is what I was expecting, so
we have great guests and then Olivia
and she shows up sometimes.
And how about you, Dana?
You can find me on the Twitter birds at Dana Roach. You can hear me on my other podcast, CMDR Central, and you can find all of us at patreon.com/EDHRetcast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter. You can also find the cast at EDHRetcast on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you have a question, you can contact us at EDHRetcast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out again to Josh Lequai and the whole team at the Command Zone for handling the post-production work on our podcast. And our thanks to our sponsors, that's TCG Player and CardKingdom.com. You can find them using the price info links on EDHREC or by visiting CardKingdom.com/EDHREC to show your support for the show. Listeners, we are going to be taking next week off for the holiday, so this will be our final episode for the year, but we will be back on January 1st. It was definitely one heck of a year for EDH Rec. We got a whole lot done, but we've also got some spicy stuff coming up in 2021 as well. So, you know, keep your eye on the front page of EDH Rec to see what might be coming. We hope everyone out there has a happy and safe holiday season. Remember to wear a mask, that Black lives and Black trans lives still matter, and we will be back at you next year with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH Rec your deck before you wreck your deck.